On today's featured, we have Scuttle. If you don't know who Scuttle is, he is the supporting character in the 1989 animated film The Little Mermaid. He's voiced by Buddy Hackett, and he is the seagull who claims to be an expert in human things. And if you didn't know, his birth name is actually Scuttlebutt. However, it changed for obvious reasons. And he's Ariel's friend. Ariel regularly consults with Scuttle on various human objects she finds, and he often wrongly names them, and that's kind of what he's known for with fans. This includes calling a fork a dinglehopper, a smoking pipe a snarfblat. But yeah, actually, upon first meeting, Ariel wasn't too fond of Scuttle because of his manic personality. Can be a bit, you know, annoying to some, but after Scuttle proved himself by saving Sebastian from pirates, he and Ariel developed a stronger relationship. He is also in the 2023 live-action adaptation of the film, and he, or actually she, is voiced by Awkwafina. This version is actually portrayed by a diving bird, because there are scenes where Scuttle is actually underwater for a certain amount of time. But the personality of Scuttle still kind of remains true to how he was in the animated film. And also a fun fact, Scuttle did not actually originate from the original Little Mermaid fairy tale by Hans Christian Andersen, but some people think that Scuttle's persona was adapted from Ariel's or the mermaid's grandmother, since she went to her grandmother to know more about humans. So it's possible that that's kind of like the closest counterpart to the original Little Mermaid story. There's also other people who have taken on Scuttle's voice, or who Scuttle has taken their voice from. That would include Maurice LaMarche, who was Scuttle's voice for the TV series In the House of Mouse, and also Chris Edgerly for any park appearance by Scuttle. Chris is his voice, or Chris Edgerly plays his voice. So yeah, there's a lot of people that are part of Scuttle's world.
And fun fact, I once lived with Scuttle, who was Scuttle for the touring Little Mermaid show.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, so lots of Scuttle.
A lot of Scuttle. No butt, but
no
Scuttle.
Butt.
But I love the Scuttle show. I love the Scuttle butt show. Or song.
Song. I know, everybody's hating on it. It was fun.
Yeah.
Remain seated, please. Permanecer sentados, por favor.
Of marvelous galaxy.
Disney, yeah. Welcome to this week's Marvelous Galaxy of Disney. We have seen Little Mermaid.
We have.
And we're excited to talk about it with you today.
Yep.
We're going to do two little segments on it. One with no spoilers, just so we can tell you how we liked it and if we think you should see it. And then one with spoilers, so if you've already seen it, you can know what we thought about it.
Yeah.
Or if you don't care about spoilers and want to know what we think about it anyway.
Yeah.
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 But, Scuttlebutt, we're not going to get there yet. We're going to start with Galaxy.
Galaxy.
Galaxy. Galaxy. Galaxy.
Galaxy.
So this first one, I just thought it was cute. I actually did not know this. So Earth apparently is in the Star Wars canon. Did you know this?
No, I didn't.
So this article mentions two ways that it has been brought. This is from Screen Rant. And one of them talks about Star Tours, because Star Tours talks about stopping at the Earth station on the way to Endor. So that one's kind of like a tongue-in-cheek, like, is any of this really canon anyway on this ride? Meh, we'll just add it. But it actually appeared in a comic book, Alan.
Oh.
So in Star Wars Tales number 19 by Hayden Blackman and Sean Murphy, apparently, I love this, Han Solo and Chewbacca are traveling throughout the galaxy, and they crash land on Earth in the Pacific Northwest. Now, the problem is Han Solo is then attacked and killed by a group of Native Americans.
Oh, no.
So this is obviously in the past, our past. And it gets even wackier because a certain archaeologist hears that there was a Bigfoot in this area years and years later. So in searching for the Bigfoot, this archaeologist unearths Han Solo's bones.
No.
This archaeologist has a name. Indiana Jones. So yeah, this comic apparently is not canon. It was kind of like a jokey, like what if type of comic.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still a really fun idea that Han Solo would be found by Indiana Jones.
I mean, we still haven't seen the new Indiana Jones movie because it's not out yet, but I feel like the writers could kind of should borrow the storyline.
Yeah, maybe that's why nobody likes the new Indiana Jones movie. I'm hoping it's just like, you know, as movie critics go, they're looking at it more like, is this something new that I haven't seen before?
Yep.
I'm hoping it's entertaining.
Yeah.
I don't expect a lot from this new indie in Dial of Destiny, but I expect to like it.
Yeah. I'm excited to see an actual Indiana Jones movie in theaters, though, which I haven't done.
That's true. You haven't.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, you know who else is probably going to go see this movie?
Who?
Pedro Pascal. So Pedro has opened up about, well, what we've kind of suspected for a while now is that he is in the Mandalorian outfit less and less.
Mm-hmm.
So he's opened up about why this is. And he said the reason for this is not what we would think. It's not so much that he dislikes being in the outfit. It's just that they wanted him in the outfit more, especially season one, to get a baseline of who is the Mandalorian, what are his movements, how does he act.
Mm-hmm.
So that way they could eventually switch him out and have somebody act similar to him. And a lot of the reasons why he's been there less and less is because Pedro has blown up in the last few years.
Yeah.
Like, it basically said if he had to stay in the suit, we wouldn't have gotten him in The Last of Us or, what is it called? The Unbearable Weight of, you know that movie.
Yeah, with Nicolas Cage.
With Nicolas Cage. So with the more and more projects he's taking on, it's harder and harder for him to suit up and be on set. It said that we will still see him on set. He still goes to the set to do, like, special helmet off appearances, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll probably just keep getting his voiceover work.
Okay.
So he does the voiceover, and he has somebody acting in the suit. And I'd say if there's any haters out there, this article does also mention Darth Vader was made the same way. So the difference is the actor in the Vader suit never was the actor outside of the Vader suit. So it was 100% different voice, different actor. So
This
isn't new to the Star Wars universe.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, yeah, like if it's just his voice that's going to appear, then it would make sense for him not to have to like, not like suffer, but work through having to be in the costume. And probably he doesn't even probably talk in the costume as well. So it's just, yeah, it makes sense. And yeah, it opens up his time. I mean, he's in like almost every scene. So that's a lot of screen time for him and a lot of, you know, filming for him to have to be there. So it's a good compromise, I guess.
It is. And yeah, it opens him up for new projects. I think the only thing they're working through right now is we have this A-lister now on our hands who's not even showing up in the show. So how much do we really pay him for voice acting?
True.
Because voice actors don't get paid as much.
That is true.
So I think that's kind of what they're working through. And that's probably why, I know we talked about this before, that's probably why we're going to kind of see Mando less and less and probably see like Bo-Katan or somebody else who is on set with their helmet off be more prevalent in the show.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, you are paying the wages of both a person in the suit as well as the voice of the suit, too. So I'm sure that adds up. And, you know, Disney needs to save money right now.
They do. They do. Well, I mean, if you do want to save money, you could head over to the Parks and Rec. Parks and Rec.
Parks and Rec.
Parks and Rec.
We'll be right back.
Yeah. So summer is closely coming upon us, and with that, Disney released details of some hotel discounts that guests can take advantage of, up to 25% off on stays on most nights between July 11th through August 20th, and September 15th through September 28th. So if your travel times align with that, you might want to check out this deal. And even you can even save up to 30% off on stays for most nights between August 21st and September 14th. Which is great. And remember, if you do stay on a Disney Resort hotel, you can get early entry, which is 30 minutes early entry to every theme park every day. So that's also a plus by staying on property, specifically on deluxe or deluxe villa resorts. Disney deluxe resorts and Disney deluxe villa resorts can get extended evening hours into the park. So even more times at the parks on select nights as well. So always nice to stay on property if you can, but I know it's also pretty pricey to do that too, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I remember we talked about this before when Rock and Roller Coaster was under refurb for a lengthy period of time, and there are a lot of rumors going on of, like, is it going to be a rethemed to the music of Queen or to Powerline from Goof Troop or a Goofy movie? But unfortunately, if you're hoping for that, that is not the case. Well, the good thing is that Rock and Roller Coaster is reopened, has reopened, but it's reopened to the same Rock and Roller Coaster with Aerosmith that we know of. But yeah, it has reopened, and people aren't really experiencing or reporting any new additions to the ride. It's just everything has been kind of cleaned up and just has been running smoother. So yeah, unfortunately, if you are expecting a new Rock and Roller Coaster, there isn't. It's just a nicer, updated version of it. Yeah.
That's good. I wish all refurbishments were like that. Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Breaks down even more now.
Yeah, I mean, I do feel that the days of Aerosmith Rock and Roller Coaster is gonna end probably in a few more years, just because it has been Aerosmith for a long time, and especially since we had like the Iron Man Avengers Flight Force that had been rethemed in Paris. I mean, we can see kind of what we can do outside of Aerosmith. So yeah, I think it does need an update.
Yeah.
Speaking of updates.
Yeah.
So, Galactic Star Cruiser, RIP in a few months. The Imagineers were actually trying to find ideas for the Star Cruiser to save it, really, because as we know, it was struggling, and that's why it's closing now. But one of the ideas was actually having the Mandalorian take over the Star Cruiser, which would have been really cool, because everyone loves The Mandalorian. I also feel like this is kind of like a quick band-aid to kind of create new interest into the Star Cruiser, but I think because of its whole setup of just being one type of an experience and being really expensive, I don't know how long this idea would kind of take off, no pun intended. But yeah, that was just, you know, this was all the kind of like updates or ideations were happening like all the way through until Disney actually announced the closure of the Halcyon. So yeah, but I'd be interested to see what exactly they would have done with the Mandalorian, if they would just add him onto the whole storyline, or if it would be a whole new story for the two-night cruise, but I guess we'll never know.
Yeah, and I mean, that says something where it hasn't even been open like a full year and they're already talking rethemes. Like,
yeah.
I don't think that would have saved it.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of another retheme.
Oh!
So the Paradise Pier Hotel, which is right behind the Pixar Pier Land in California Adventure. As we know, it is being rethemed to the Pixar Pier Hotel, or sorry, Pixar Place Hotel. And we actually got some sneak peeks of the area, or of the hotel itself. Disney released some concept art of the new lobby, as well as some areas as well, too. They gave a sneak peek of the Finding Nemo-themed water play zone, which features Hank the Octopus, and also has a Crush splash pad. They're still keeping the water slide as well. There's also like a gathering place. I forgot what it's called, but it's updated so you can actually see the fireworks or the World of Color show at night, and even probably the fireworks at Disneyland as well, too. And they also gave some updates about the restaurant that they're adding, Great Maple. If you haven't been there, there's one in Pasadena, which is actually pretty good. So it's a pretty decent area, addition to the hotel. And we actually got some firsthand viewing of the lobby area that has been updated. Yeah, we went to Disney over the weekend. And if you're curious to see what the updates are or how the updates are going along, you are able to visit the lobby and see all of that. It's really cool. Like, it's very clean and just very, like, bright and clean. They also updated the gift shop as well, too. And if you are a Pixar fan, this is probably, like, the place you want to go to get all your Pixar merch, because it's basically all there. But very excited, and that will be opened in, I believe the construction is going to be finished in summer of this year. So if you're looking to stay there or be one of the first people staying there, you might want to try to book a room around that time. According to our friend Vicky,
you called her out.
Rooms are sold out for the month of October. So just a heads up there. But yeah, really excited for it.
Yeah, we're going to stay there.
Yeah. Want to stay there a lot?
Yeah.
Well, something that's not staying for now.
Oh,
Fantasmic. So we already reported on this before, with a dragon being burnt or caught on fire. Just a quick update here, because they did previously announce that Fantasmic would stay closed until basically throughout May. Well, it's looking like Fantasmic will continue to be closed throughout Labor Day, basically. So that would be the earliest Fantasmic would come back to operation. It could extend later. It could open up after Labor Day. But right now, Labor Day is the target reopening date for Fantasmic.
Wow, that's a long time.
It is. But yeah, hopefully when it comes back, it'll be a fresh and new show. Just like a new show coming to Disneyland in Hong Kong. Disney just confirmed a new show that will combine the worlds of Up, The Jungle Book, and Moana. Which is really exciting. So a lot of jungle-related shows coming to their Adventureland theater, or the stage, I guess you can say, because it is like an outdoor stage. When I went to Hong Kong Disney, I saw the Moana. They did the Moana retelling in that same stage as well, too. So, I think it has been that since now. So I'm glad that they are updating that as well.
Yay!
Yeah. And so we are going to talk about Little Mermaid, which is really exciting. But what is also exciting is they have a lot of things celebrating the movie as well, too. I mean, there is the Little Mermaid meet and greet with the Halle Bailey lookalike Ariel. They also have some special foods as well, too. But one thing that we were surprised to see when we were at the park is a sand sculpture of Ariel and Ursula. And it's sponsored by Pandora, because they have some merchandise themed after Little Mermaid. But it's really cool. Check out our Instagram, because we did post pictures of what it looks like. And it's really cool. I don't know how long it's going to be up there, because it is like an actual sand sculpture. But really exciting and really cool to see in person as well.
I hate the way they made Ursula's hand. Like, hey guys, it's me, Ursula. Hi.
I'm the poor, unfortunate soul right now. Yeah, I'm sure, you know, if that sand sculpture would look back, he might not be as prideful maybe in that Ursula.
Wow!
But speaking of pride, June is coming up soon, and with that is Pride Month. And every year, Disney does this where they add treats and merch as well too for Pride Month. We actually got to see some of the new Pride merch, like this new spirit jersey, hoodie, and other stuff that they have there. But really excited to see a bunch of new Pride foods that'll be coming to the park. That would include things like a Pride mousse cake at the Contempo Cafe in Walt Disney World. There's also a Mickey-shaped macaron at the Jolly Holiday Bakery Cafe. At Woody's Lunchbox at Hollywood Studios, there's a Pride Lunchbox tart, which looks really good. And even in Pride Night, which we're going to be going to, they also have additional special Pride foods as well, which we'll report on when after we go back or after we go. But if you were able to get a Pride Night ticket for either night, they are having a special Pride dinner package at the New Orleans Cafe, which has special foods, specifically the Monte Cristos. Apparently they have special Monte Cristo sandwiches themed to Pride, which is exciting. So, yeah, if you go, let us know. Maybe we'll see you there on June 13th if you're there. So, yeah, really excited.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we'll take pictures and share with y'all.
Thank you for that marvelous wrap-up.
You're welcome.
Marvelous.
Marvelous.
Marvelous. So, a couple things on Marvelous. I think this is so cool. This is such a good idea.
Yeah.
So if you are an X-Men fan like me, you will be happy to know there are some live events you can choose from coming up for X-Men. So first off, at the Park Nightclub in San Diego, PARQ, on Saturday, July 22nd from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m., you can go to the D23 presented X-Men Hellfire Gala.
Ooh.
That is so cool.
That is cool.
So in the comics, in the last, I'd say, I think 2 years, maybe 3 years, they started doing the Hellfire Gala, where mutants get all dressed up like the Met Gala, and they all go to Krakoa, and they knock elbows with a very select guest invited. Like, usually the Avengers are there and other heroes, and it's just a huge event. So for the first time ever, you can actually go to a live Hellfire Gala where they are encouraging people to dress up to look like a decked out mutant. And there's different places you can go. So you can go to the Green Lagoon, where there's a green carpet, and you can enter an incredible locale. It's inspired by the watering hole on Krakoa, and attendees will find a greenery there. They'll find like a lush island paradise, and they can also get different drinks there. So I'm hoping it's alcoholic.
No.
Also, you can go to the Hellfire Ballroom, where it looks like this is where you're able to dance and also just walk around the space. It says curated music meets mutant moves as a dazzling dancer beckons to any hero with a hunger for vivacious dancing and celebration. Those looking to share a secretive assemblage with their own Hellfire inner circle can catch their breath and snag a booth on the edges of the dance floor. And then there's Lair X. Dive deeper into mutant culture and head down to the underground lair dedicated to iconic X-Men flair. Looking back on the last 60 years of mutant history, Lair X will be home to inspired activities with its own dance floor, bar, and seating area. So this is a little pricey, but it's also kind of going along with the 60th anniversary of X-Men. So it looks like if you're a gold member with D23, it's $65 with a $7 processing fee per ticket. For expedited entry for a gold member, it's $85 plus 7. For general members, it's $125 plus 7. And for expedited entry for a general, it's $155 plus $7.
Okay.
So pretty pricey, but I mean, there's a lot there. So yeah. If you have the extra money, it'd be fun if you're that X fan. Mm-hmm. If you're that X fan and you're currently unemployed, you can sadly look on from a distance. But yeah, I just wanted to still at least share it.
Yeah, I'm excited to see the pictures from the event. And I mean the price is, you know, pretty high, but at the same time too, it is kind of like, especially if you're interested in like the fashion part, it reminds me a lot of the Met Gala, which is, you know, also pretty expensive to attend if you're even invited to it. So it is kind of, it can also kind of let you live your Met Gala dreams too, in a way. But yeah, I'm really excited to see pictures of it and see what costumes and outfits people will be attending then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully production doesn't get halted on the Hellfire Gala.
Yeah, because unfortunately for Marvel, another Marvel Studios film has been halted, and that's for the Thunderbolts. That is the latest of the movies in the MCU, in the Phase 5 MCU slate that have been halted due to the ongoing writer's strike. Again, so that's Thunderbolts, but that also adds on to other productions for like Blade and also for Wonder Man, which was a series coming to Disney Plus. So yeah, if you're looking forward to the Thunderbolts coming to theaters, unfortunately you'll have to wait a little longer because of the strike. But right now it's halted, but we'll recommence once the strike is over. Womp.
Womp. Well, that's good at least. Well, I mean, if you can't make it to the Hellfire Gala, or you're just tired of the writer's strike, but I mean, not tired for the wrong reasons, because we're on the side of the writers, they should get paid more, but it does infringe on our shows and movies. Mm-hmm. But there's another live event, Alan.
What's that?
This is something that our friends over at X Reads Podcast are involved with. So this is September 16th and 17th. They are putting on the Uncanny Experience. So this is huge, because this is like fan-made. It's fan-made for the fans. So this is going to take place in, I believe, Minneapolis. Yep, Minneapolis. And what it includes is you'll be able to go to the event, and you'll be able to meet some pretty big names in the X-Men world, including Cal Dodd, who does the voice of Wolverine in the original X-Men animated series, Lenore Zahn, who does the voice of Rogue. You can meet Larry Houston, who we almost got to meet. He was right there in front of me, but somebody else was talking to him forever. But he's legendary for the fact that he is such a fan that he like made all the cameos happen in the original cartoon. Also, you can meet the man who none of this would have happened without him, Mr. Chris Claremont, who is famous for writing a lot of stories that we love from X-Men, including the Phoenix Saga, the Dark Phoenix Saga, Days of Future Past. He created the New Mutants. So he's also made characters like Rogue, Gambit, Psylocke, like some of my favorite characters, Jubilee. You like Jubilee?
I do.
So yeah, this is a really cool experience. It's put on inside of a mansion-y type building, so you get the feeling that you actually are going to school at the Xavier Institute. There's also panels that you can shop from, vendors. They're bringing in cosplayers to dress up like mutants. You can also see different panels about X-Men in the comics. There's an arcade room. Like, this thing has everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a promo video on the website, and at first when you played it, I thought it was like some sort of X-Men escape room, because it looked that immersive. But I think it's really smart that, you know, it's not just a regular like con for people to attend. Like, there's you're kind of like actually living in the world of X-Men, which is cool.
Yeah. And for this one, for the weekend, it's $95 for general admission. VIP is $200. And Omega level, well, I don't know how much it is because it's already sold out.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's getting some buzz.
Yeah.
So this is another, like, if I get a job before this, I'd like to go. Yeah. But, you know, whether I can go or not, best to our friends for putting this on, and hopefully the whole thing goes without a hitch.
Yeah. And if we, in case we don't make it, if you end up going, let us know, and maybe you can come on here and talk about your experience.
Yeah. Well, that's it for Marvelous. Shall we get over to Disney?
Disney.
Disney.
So I love this a lot. John Stamos, who, if you don't know, he is famous for being in Full House. He was actually on a podcast with Kiki Palmer on her podcast, Baby, This is Kiki Palmer. And he actually talked about his struggle with being a Disney adult. I think, you know, a few of us have gone through that struggle as well, too, of, like, kind of, I guess, even, like, coming out of being or coming out to people being a Disney adult. But this actually kind of, his, I guess, awakening of being a Disney adult came from a dinner that he had with Ryan Gosling.
Oh.
He was talking to Ryan and was like, you know, no one's going to take me serious with all this Mickey Mouse stuff. So he has to, like, distance himself from it. And, like, Ryan Gosling was like, but you're a Disney fan. And yeah, Ryan Gosling told him, like, he's obsessed. He's a Disney adult. He actually goes to the parks by himself. He just wears his headphones and goes around, rides rides. He even has a special mixtape that he listens to while he's at the parks. And yeah, Stamos was just like, you know what? I'm a Disney guy too, so I need to embrace this. So I'm happy he's embracing his Disney adultness, like a lot of people should. But yeah, I think it's just a cool story.
I think that's kind of funny because, I don't know, John Stamos, I feel like, does so much with Disney and ABC that I'm kind of like, well, yeah, of course you are.
Yeah.
So it's funny that he, like, lives in this shame.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I'm glad. I think everyone should embrace their Disney adult if they have one. Like, I know a lot of Disney adults get hate on, but I mean, just if that's what you love, then do what you love, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of love.
Not a lot of love here.
Yeah, well, there is definitely not a lot of love with DeSantis and the Disney feud. But another company has stepped in favor of Disney's side, which is great, and that's Nike. So Nike's top executive praised Disney's CEO Bob Iger for his handling of basically Disney going to war with DeSantis. And I think it's just great. To quote him, he said that, "I think Bob's doing a great job at this." And that's from Nike CEO John Donahoe. So I'm glad that another big company is stepping in and kind of praising a company that is unrightfully being attacked by a governor. So yeah, go Nike. Support them.
Yeah. I mean, I still am on the side where I kind of just wish no company was political, so that way I can get my Chick-fil-A without worrying about where the money's going.
Yeah.
But I don't get Chick-fil-A, by the way. But yeah, I do like to hear that Nike is supporting Disney, because yeah, what I feel what DeSantis is doing is anti-business. Mm-hmm. Like, just going full in on attacking a business that makes so much money for a state. Like, why do you want to hurt, especially right now with so many people out of jobs? Why are you hurting a business?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I like that Nike's doing this. I think this is great because, especially for Nike being a very youth-oriented business. I mean, I know everybody likes Nike, but they're more popular with the youngsters. Mm-hmm. This is good because they're seeing, like, oh, this company I like is siding against DeSantis. So hopefully that helps to kind of angle where people are putting their faith.
Yeah.
Well, we've been watching a show, Alan.
We have.
We've been watching Chinese Born American.
We have not watched that one, but we watched American Born Chinese.
American Born Chinese. That's what I said. American Born Chinese. Wow. American Born Chinese.
Yes.
So we're halfway through. I just thought we could kind of tell people about it real quick, yeah, even though we're not done, and let them know how we're liking it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, this has quite the cast.
Yes, it does.
We have Michelle Yeoh. Mm-hmm. We have... Oh, wait, Stephanie Hsu's in it, right?
She's in it, but so far she hasn't been in the episode we've seen yet.
We haven't seen her.
Unless we missed her.
Unless we missed her. And then what's the grandpa's name?
We also have... James Hong.
James Hong, yeah.
And we also...
Legendary.
Mm-hmm. And also Ki-Heen Kwong, who...
Short Round.
Is Short Round, as we know from Indiana Jones. And we also... It's led by Ben Wong, who plays Jin Wang in the show. It's a series, and they're pretty short. The first episode was probably the longest. I think it was closer to an hour. But the other episodes are closer to, like, 30 minutes. So pretty easy watches. And... it's just really cool. It's about Ben Wang, who is American-born Chinese person who is a high school student, and it's just kind of like following him and how his life collides with a mystical world, heavenly world. It combines a lot of martial arts, especially with Michelle Yeoh. I love her scenes especially. And yeah, I'm curious to see where this goes. And something that I've learned too is that the American Born Chinese show is actually based off of I think it's a graphic novel.
Yeah.
So that's really cool if you're into reading novels or reading in general. Check that out as well, too. So far it's great. And all episodes are out, too, so you can also binge watch it as well, too, if you want.
One thing I like about it that I didn't know going in is it's very based on the lore of the Monkey King, which is a character that is now in DC. He's also in the movie Journey to the West by Stephen Chow. So... I like that it's presenting Chinese culture and legends within an American show. So it's easy for an American to follow. You're getting the culture, you're getting the language, you're getting the legend, but it's also set in America, so it's not completely foreign to us.
Yeah. I really like this last episode we watched. It kind of gives nod to all the classic Kung Fu Chinese movies. Because it's a flashback episode, but it's filmed in a way that it looks like it was filmed back in, the 70s, 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even the credits, which is really fun. Cool. Well, we saw something else this last week.
We did.
The Little Mermaid!
Little Mermaid, live action.
So, I've said this before, I was very worried for this movie because I love the cartoon. I could... say certain lines from the film. I know that film so well because I've watched it so much. So especially after Aladdin was a little disappointing for me live action, I was scared to go into Little Mermaid, which is my other favorite. I was very pleased with this movie. I think I rated it higher than anybody else in our group. Because I would say the main thing that takes away from the movie is some of the actors rehash some of the lines that we know and love from the cartoon, but they don't do it as well as the voice actors. So it's kind of you want to see familiarity in these live actions, but at the same time, if it's not to an equal or better enthusiasm, you're kind of disappointed. Mm-hmm. So that took away a little bit in parts, but overall, I really what they added to it. I got a lot of the stuff that I liked from the cartoon with kind of an added lore. Mainly, without spoiling anything, this is our spoiler free. We're not going to let you know. But they play around with the idea of, since Ariel's a mermaid, she has a siren song, which we really didn't explore in the cartoon. So I really liked that addition.
Yeah.
It kept it interesting.
Yeah, it felt more... like in the world of like Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah,
because it felt more like it was in the Caribbean, because some of the music, even the music in the background, had the like I forgot what this they're called, like the drums,
bongos
kind of, or the like tropical type of
like the metal music. Ones.
Yeah, the metal yeah. ones. So it felt like that. Like I wanted to just go on a beach and just hang out.
Yeah.
Type feel. And yeah, it even felt like Jack Sparrow was going to come out and just run yeah. around at some point. So I do kind of like that. Kind of, I don't know if it was like a, they meant to make that change, but it did feel like different from the cartoon, because the cartoon felt a more, I guess, European in a way.
Yeah.
So yeah, this one felt a lot more, just piratey, and I love that Caribbean. Like I wanted a pina colada. While
wow. and one thing that I had expressed, because I wasn't worried about Halle Bailey.
Oh, not
Halle
at all.
Bailey.
Yeah, Halle Bailey.
And she was wonderful. Like she even sounded like Jodie Benson. Like in the way she delivered her lines, I was like, "How are you doing this so perfectly?"
Yeah.
But the one I was worried about was Melissa McCarthy. Mm-hmm. And the woman delivered.
Yeah.
I loved her as Ursula, because what she did so well is she got the lines. She sounded like Pat Carroll, but she also added her own flavor to it. Mm-hmm. And then we get like a more fleshed out Ursula, and she was amazing.
Yeah.
I really liked her.
And just I think she also established her own one-liners as well too, with some of the funny things that
yeah.
she said. So yeah, I definitely feel like she did a great job in making it her own, but still I feel like the original Ursula would be proud of this Ursula too.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And so this movie ran about 2 hours and 15 minutes, so it's about 45 minutes longer than the cartoon was.
Uh-huh.
And it didn't feel like it was super longer than the cartoon. It felt pretty smooth. I wasn't like aching in my chair, no. moving around like, when does this end?
Yeah.
I think some of the new songs could have been better, but besides that, like, very well done.
Yeah. Like, to me, it even kind of felt rushed, especially in the second half. Like, I feel like they could have maybe expanded or added a bit more scenes.
Yeah.
In the second half. But yeah, besides that, like, it was great, and I thought the timing was fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. So after we do our featured and our covered Disney and our Margal Disbiz, we'll come back with a full fleshed out, spoiler-filled review.
Cool.
Cool. All right. Before we get to cover Disney, mm-hmm. do you have a favorite moment?
My favorite moment is, I'm going in between two things. Probably is, I was going to say Splash Mountain, because that was our last Splash Mountain that we did. Just wanted to say that, but that's not my favorite moment. It would be the D23. So if you don't know, we are D23 gold members. And to go along with your membership, you get a gift for the year. And the gift this year is a 100th anniversary Mickey statue. So mine came in the mail today, and it looks really cool. I was actually surprised. Like, I feel like this is definitely an upgrade from previous D23 welcome packages or annual packages. So this one looks really cool. And I'll probably share a picture with you guys on our Instagram sometime this week.
Wow.
Yeah.
My favorite moment is, after all the drama that was going down around Little Mermaid and all the haters wanting it to fail because Ariel isn't white, Ariel doesn't look like me, this is ruining my childhood. Like, after all that hate that went down, this movie is exceeding expectations. Mm-hmm. And my favorite thing about it is, when we were at Disneyland on Saturday, everybody was celebrating it. Like,
yeah.
People had the new Little Mermaid ears on. I saw a lot of black women, like, celebrating with their Little Mermaid merch. So I just love that, like, Halle Bailey has given this generation, like, a new spark. Like, she is a hero for so many, because uh-huh. we got to see someone who's not white play Ariel, and it's great.
Yeah.
It's great that it's showing those, what would you call the opposite of woke, sleepers?
I don't even know.
It's showing the sleepers that, yeah, we do want this kind of stuff in our media, and it doesn't bother us. Yeah. So I love that.
Well, I mean, like, John and I were talking about this the other day. Like, if you're not happy with them changing the skin color of a character, just note that, like, that's kind of how we, like, minorities feel a lot of times, because, like, we can't, we feel that we can't relate to characters that don't look at us, but we have to kind of just change that mentality because we have to be used to it. Whereas, like, you know, there's a lot of, you know, white characters out there, and, like, just because that changes, it doesn't mean that that character can't be yours as well. Just because that person's colors, the color of their skin doesn't match to yours, doesn't mean that you can't relate to them because of that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, so good for you, Hailey Bailey, for, like, she's everywhere right now. She pops up in every single, like, search that I pull up. It's news about Hailey Bailey, and it's all good. So I'm glad that she's getting her just rewards.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I know it's not Disney-related, but the Color Purple trailer came out, and she's in it. And I'm really excited for that because the musical is great. If it ever comes out on tour to you, watch it. But I'm really excited for the movie.
That's not Disney.
I know. I just said that.
I know. So last week we asked you, will Miss Marvel's death be permanent? I was really looking forward to getting 100% no on this.
Oh, no. What happened?
Somebody accidentally voted yes.
Oh, no.
Who was that, Alan?
I don't know.
Oh, because I do. It was you.
It was me. I read it too fast, and I voted the opposite of what I would have voted.
Yeah.
I also wanted to keep things interesting.
Oh, geez. I also think we're right. I think that she's going to be revealed to be a mutant, and that she's going to be resurrected by Krakoa.
Oh.
I really think it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then that's when the X-Men come into the MCU.
They're already there. So for this week's Margal Disbiz question, I want to know, I guess I can't say only if you've seen Little Mermaid, but even if you haven't seen it yet, maybe just in the commercials, who stands out to you in this new movie? Do you like Ariel? Do you like Eric? Do you like Ursula? Or do you like Triton?
Hmm.
Hmm. Well, those are like the big, like, people played characters. It's weird to do the CG since they're not real.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Okay,
it's just, I mean, when you'll listen to our spoil filled review,
you'll see
why we Triton.
All right, so this week's cover Disney, I've been holding on to this one, but this is one of my favorite Disney songs. I freaking love this song. It gets stuck in my head. Alan probably hates the song right now because when it gets stuck in my head, I sing it to him. This is I Want to Be Like You, as performed by Fall Out Boy.
Mm-hmm.
Did you enjoy that?
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Do you like it better when Fall Out Boy sings it or me?
Fob.
Ew. All right. So that brings us to our spoiler-filled review of Little Mermaid. So just another warning, if you haven't seen it yet and you don't want spoilers, shut us down right now because we are going to talk spoilers for the film.
Yeah.
All right. So, Alan, now that we're here, Who stood out to you the most?
Who stood out? Well, Ursula, hands down. I mean, she was the, I guess, like the breakout. I mean, she's already a star in many ways, but she's definitely the breakout role in this for sure. Yeah, I mean, again, like a lot of her just one-liners. My favorite one was when Ariel was like, she said something about her being a sea witch, and then Ursula was like, what?
Right?
I just love that so much.
Yeah, she, yeah, that, and I wonder how much of that was improv. Because it was very like Melissa McCarthy doing that kind of stuff, you know what I mean? Yeah, she was probably my standout too, because I didn't expect it. I love this article I read where she said that she based a lot of her performance on what she's learned from drag queens, and that she feels she has a drag queen inside her that she's been contemplating bringing into the world. So this, I think, was kind of her playing her drag character as Ursula. Which, if that's what it is, I want to see more.
And I like, because I feel like at first when I heard that, I was like, oh, she's just, you know, there could be a chance that she could just be saying that. But there are, like, really lovely pictures on his Instagram with her posing with Nina West. And just, like, you can see the starstruckness in Melissa's eyes when she saw Nina West. So cool.
Well, and what's cool is when I think I surmise that Melissa did this to kind of assuage us that she was on the right path. But when around the time she got announced as Ursula, she did a series of photo shoots of her dressed as Divine, who's the drag queen that Ursula is based on. And just that, I'm like, you know what you're doing. You're doing this on purpose. So yeah, she's obviously a big fan of drag, and it really came out in her performance. The thing I really liked, of course, we talked about, I was hoping that they'd make her Triton's sister, and they did, but they didn't really do a lot with that, so it's just kind of more of a nod than a story element, but it does make her reason for wanting to be in control more so, because she was supposed to be in control, but she got kicked out.
Yeah. I mean, this just made me realize, like, because we have, like, the Scar movie coming out, I hope they do an Ursula origin story as well. Because I want to see more of Melissa McCarthy now, and would love to see her, her origin story and her relationship with Triton, to see, like, what strained their relationship.
Well, if I remember right, and I don't remember where I heard this, I think I heard that it was something to do with, like, Triton blaming Ursula for the death of his wife. So I don't know, like, maybe she doesn't help her, maybe she doesn't save her, she runs away, but I think it's something like that. And that could be interesting.
That could, and we can even see a storyline with Ariel's mom too. So maybe they just need to recast Triton, but besides that,
what? The other thing I really loved about Ursula is she was very much like, I've been her before when you're, like, stuck inside, like when I had COVID and couldn't leave my hotel room for 5 days. I very much became Ursula, where I was talking to myself. I was throwing myself in weird positions and just being weird. And we very much got that from her in the movie. And I love that. I thought that's so smart, because, yeah, she is alone except for with her eels, basically.
I especially when she freaked out trying to find that one potion.
We see her even, like, talking to her tentacles, which is genius.
They're like, they basically have, like, a mind of their own, because as they're she's searching, like, one of her tentacles reaches out and finds it, and it's like, oh, it's right here.
That was great. I love that. But yeah, you mentioned it. So Javier Bardem as Triton. Oh, that was rough.
I mean, it was just, well, for me anyways, like, I don't think it really hit me as much, because I'm not, like, a huge fan of Triton. I don't know. It's just, he's not a character that I really get interested in. So I'm just like, whatever, but I know, like, a lot of people also didn't really like him, and I can see it as well, because his one of the articles I read, like, described his performance as sleepy, and I think that's, like, right on the nose of how he portray Triton.
Yeah, and the other one I had a little bit of problem with in the beginning, I want to clarify, was David Diggs as Sebastian. Just because, to me, Sebastian and Triton are very much, like, very animated voices in the cartoon.
Uh-huh.
And so, getting them in the movie, they were saying a lot of the lines that are very animated lines, and they're saying them so, like, dry. And, like, Sebastian, I was fine with. Probably, like, after the first quarter of the movie, when Sebastian starts to kind of do his own thing a little bit more, it was fine. Like, I liked his performance. But, yeah, just King Triton. And yeah. I'm not the biggest fan of him either. I think in recent years, rewatching the movie as an adult, I have identified with him a little bit more, because it's a tough position, mm-hmm. having a kid who you think they're in danger. Like, what do you do if they're not listening to you? But him, like, going at it the way of destroying her artifacts isn't right, but yeah. He was just, yeah, so boring through the whole thing.
Yeah. I mean, to the Sebastian's defense, I think it is tough, too, when they make a true-to-life character. Because, like, you can't animate emotion on a crab.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. I think that's always a tough part, because even I think Lion King was kind of like that, too, in a way. When they do, like, true-to-life animated characters. So, yeah, I think, again, like, you have to be very animated in your voice to kind of compensate in the loss of animation in expression in the character itself.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's just, it's hard when you're so used to the delivery of lines from the cartoon to hear them spoken by anybody else.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, yeah, I feel like Halle Bailey,
uh-huh.
and Melissa McCarthy did is, even if they didn't deliver the lines the same, they did so much of their own thing, mm-hmm. that it made up for, like, if they didn't deliver a line the way you want it, at least you're getting other things from them.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like David Diggs didn't come into his own until partway through the movie.
Yeah.
And especially because he got a lot of newer lines later. So it was like, oh, I don't have to compare him anymore. He can just do his thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the other one that has been coming under fire a little bit is Jonah Howard King as Eric. Mm-hmm. And I thought his performance was fine.
Yeah, I thought it was fine too. I mean, Eric's, as a prince, like, he never really was an over-the-top character, a very animated character. He was just prince, and he was nice to look at.
Yeah. My only problem with him is that godforsaken song.
Yeah.
It was bad.
Yeah.
What were you thinking?
Yeah, and a lot of people were saying, because that song and other songs were written by Lin-Manuel Miranda, and I think a lot of people are starting to get kind of, I don't want to say tired of him, but, like, we're kind of seeing a lot of the same things, or it feels like Disney's go-to guy for making music right now. So I think, I don't know, it's just interesting that, like, I think we're kind of finding the peak of Lin-Manuel Miranda, and I think that this one, especially this Prince Eric song, was something that we're like, okay, maybe we need to find a new writer.
Yeah, and some people are saying Scuttlebutt, sang by Scuttle and Sebastian, is, like, the worst Disney song ever, which I thought it was cute.
I actually love that song the most of all the songs, because, yeah, it was fun. And I love the little rap that Scuttle, as we know now, it's his full name is Scuttlebutt, did. Like, I thought it was a fun kind of upbeat part to bring, you know, to the movie.
Yeah, I mean, I will agree with the haters a little bit. Like, having kind of a rap song in the middle of Little Mermaid was a little jarring, because it's not, like, the aesthetic.
Yeah.
But, like, it's a fun song. Yeah. And, I mean, the whole movie, like, just the fact that people are singing at all, yeah. you know, like, that doesn't happen.
Yeah. I think it's also, I mean, I don't want to make assumptions, but maybe they wanted a song for Aquafina to kind of sing, but maybe she's not a singer. So it's her way to, like, talk with music.
Yeah.
which, you know, I didn't mind it. Again, I don't mind. I didn't mind at all. It was good.
Yeah, it was good. It was fun.
Yeah.
I was surprised at how emotional I got for the stupidest part. I haven't talked to you about this.
Which one?
When Eric throws Max into the water to get to safety.
Oh, yeah.
And when Ariel came and, like, put her hand to lead him to the boat, I was like, oh, my God, I wanted to cry. I was like, I love her so much. Like, just that one small action, and I was in the palm of her hand for the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
I love that they added that. I thought that was genius.
Uh-huh.
I love that they added her having the siren song, because we get – I feel like – if you look between the lines of the movie, and maybe not even that close between the lines, I think they made it clear that Eric was obsessed with Ariel because she bewitched him. But then in them going out together, he actually fell in love with her. So it gave kind of that reason for them to be obsessed with each other.
Uh-huh.
And then realize, like, hey, I actually like this person too. Now everything's going out of my head that I want to talk about.
No, I mean, I'm curious to see how other theater goers reacted when they saw Flounder at first.
I forgot about that.
We had a pretty iconic reaction, or we heard a pretty iconic reaction when Flounder first came on screen. When he showed up, someone was like, what the heck? Or what did he say?
He said, what the?
Yeah. And I think that was just, I mean, first off, like, you haven't seen him in the previews. But yeah, I mean, it is a little jarring to see him at first because you're used to the cartoon version of Flounder. But, you know, that is what I think. I forgot what type of fish Flounder is. I think he's a flounder fish. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's how they look. So, you know, again, Disney trying to make everything look true to life. But yeah, that was pretty funny. I'm kind of glad they kind of, I feel like they limited his screen time more so than the animated movie. I don't know if it's for that reason, but I'm glad they did. And yeah, I mean, I think another thing that we should talk about are the lyric changes.
Yes.
Kiss a Girl and Poor Unfortunate Soul. My take for it is that I thought it was fine. It didn't really take anything away from me. I think if you're like a super fan that knows songs, the lyrics by word, you might notice it. But yeah, I thought it was fine.
Well, I feel like the one in Poor Unfortunate Souls, I feel like it was only changed as a story element because they brought blood magic into it by Ariel having to take off a fin and then the blood. So it just made the spell a little more sinister in nature. So they added that line about Ursula getting the blood. But yeah, the Kiss the Girls, I'm still kind of like, I don't know that anything in the song needed to be changed, but I didn't mind that it was changed, if that makes sense.
It didn't change anything at all.
Yeah, and I know we're being more hyper-aware with, like, consent, but I didn't feel like the old movie, the original movie, really had anything that was unconsenting about the kiss, so it didn't... I understand why Disney did it, but I don't know if we needed it.
Yeah. Also, like, if you didn't tell me that they changed the lyrics, I wouldn't have known.
Yeah. It was subtle. It was quick.
Yeah.
Another thing that I liked or didn't like is the reveal of Triton turning Ariel human. Because our friend Jesse and I talked about it. Like, it was a big moment in the cartoon. Like, Ariel's thinking she's not going to have life with Eric anymore, that she's been caught, the jig is up, and she's forlorn on the rock. And then Triton makes the water light up with his trident, and Ariel sees it and gets all excited. And then she, like, walks out of the water and reveals that she has the dress on. So it's just a really big moment. And all we really got in the live action is Eric is looking for Lauren, Max comes over, and then Ariel's playing with Max. They're like, oh, hey, it's you.
Well, and they put her in, like, the gross blue dress that has been, like, soaked in the water.
She's,
like, kind of looks, like, homeless.
And, I mean, I know, like, we did get a really magical moment right after that with, like, all the merpeople, like, seeing Ariel off and showing their support. I really loved Triton's line, even if I didn't love how it was delivered, Javier, where he says, you shouldn't have had to lose your voice to be heard. And I was like, that is such the line. I love that line. Mm-hmm. So we did get a big moment. But yeah, I just wish that they didn't take away our moment of seeing her come. At least, like, maybe if Eric didn't see her come out of the water, we got to see it happening, you know?
Like, that would have been cool to see, like, sea foam, because, you know, that's part of the original story, like, surround her and, like, have her transform that way. Yeah, just something more magical.
Yeah, and it would have been so quick.
Yeah.
I also really love that Ariel was her own hero of her story. Mm-hmm. So instead of Eric saving Ariel in the end, Ariel's the one who drove the ship into Ursula.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Yeah, that was cool. So yeah, a lot of, I feel good about the changes they made. Of course, it wasn't a perfect movie, but it is my favorite of the live actions.
Yeah.
I just paused real quick because I realized I don't know if I was counting like Maleficent or Cruella, which I really like those too. Mm-hmm. But for, I guess, the live action remakes.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, yeah, because I think those are more up for criticism because you are comparing it to an existing movie, where I think all the other, like, origin live action, like, villain movies are more creative. They can be more creative in their stories. So, yeah.
Yeah.
One thing, I guess not really a spoiler, but if you're listening to this and you haven't watched the movie yet or you're rewatching it, I just saw a TikTok where at the end, there are like two human characters walking in the back while Ariel and Eric are kind of saying their farewells to the mer people, and one of the extras in the back falls.
Oh, that's funny.
So look out for that. It's going to be, he said it's on the bottom left of the screen in that scene. So look out for two people walking in the background because one falls.
Funny, and they kept it. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I'm trying to think. Did I forget anything? I don't think. Oh, one last thing I just remembered.
What?
I did actually like, because in the cartoon, Ariel goes up to the surface to see Scuttle. In the movie, it's a little different, where Scuttle comes underwater and she talks to her underwater.
Yeah.
I actually, at first, was kind of like, why didn't she go up to Scuttle? And then I realized, like, that made it more powerful to me when Ariel did break the surface. Because it's not something she's ever done, it seemed like. Mm-hmm. Like, she actually was obeying her father. So when she finally does break the surface, you're like, oh no, now she's in it.
Yeah.
So I really liked that they did that.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, seagulls can, like, breathe underwater? Like, how can this bird stay underwater? And yeah, it's because it's a diving bird. I didn't know those existed.
Well, and I wasn't that worried about it because I was watching a bird talk to a mermaid. So I was it's okay. So yeah, I thought that was interesting that they took that into account, that, like, it does make it bigger.
Yeah.
And partway through the movie, during Under the Sea, I turned and looked at our friend Jesse, and she had the most bitter boots look on her face. Yeah. So after the movie, I'm like, you don't like Under the Sea? She's like, no. So I would agree with Jesse. Under the Sea could have been bigger, like it was in the cartoon. They did some different things with it, but I didn't dislike it.
Yeah.
It's just, they made some choices. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I think we pretty thoroughly gave out our feelings. We love the movie. It wasn't perfect, but it's pretty darn good.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the articles are also saying, like, this is a good movie, but the bar has been low for live action remakes. So I think that does play a part of it, but I hope that this shows that Disney is kind of learning from the mistakes from old live action, or from the previous live action remakes, and are going to do a better job. This has been shown with Ariel or Little Mermaid, and I hope they do it with, I believe, the Hercules live action remake is coming out, and also Lilo and Stitch and Mulan as well too. So yeah,
well, I really liked the Mulan live action.
I did too.
I really liked Beauty and the Beast. Aladdin was almost there for me. Mm-hmm. They just made, in my opinion, some really bad choices that ruined it for me.
Yeah, my big miss was I wish Mulan had musical scenes.
Yeah, like, yeah,
that was the only thing. But yeah, I did like Mulan a lot.
Yeah. Cool. Well, don't let Kevin hear us say that we like Mulan, because he did not. But speaking of Kevin, you can find me and him on Solving for X. This week, we are on Proteus Part 2. You can hear Proteus Part 1 last week. You can also find Kevin and me on Words of the Witches, where last week we did an interview with Michael Bailey Smith from Charmed. He played Belteazar. And a new episode this Friday.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't have Once Upon a Cult to talk about anymore.
Yeah, so Once Upon a Cult is now done. So if you ever wanted to catch up on all the episodes, now you can leisurely, because, yeah, there's no more new episodes.
All 100 of them.
All 100 of them, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we just did our reunion recap that came out last week, so check that out.
Cool. Yeah, and check out my book, Witch's Brew, A Dream of Waking, on Amazon. And we will see you next week with more Margal Disbiz news.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. Bye.